From WNYC New York Public Radio, I'm Sarah Fischko, and these are the Fischko Files. Each week I put together a personal essay on music, art, culture, or media. You can hear all of the Fischko Files, plus some of my one-hour documentaries and special programs on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. So please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
Composer William Baulkham has borrowed a thing or two in his life. He's been, for decades now, one of America's leading composers of concert music and opera. Decades in which he freely admits he has taken lovingly from everywhere and everybody.
I think the thing I would say today about all of it is that you cannot really use a musical style unless you truly, deeply love it. You really, truly need to immerse yourself, really understand it, and enjoy it as part of your basic style.
Baulkham, born in Seattle, self-proclaimed synthesist, has written big pieces like Songs of Innocence and of Experience, a landmark setting of words by William Blake. He's also composed smaller pieces like piano rags and cabaret songs, but he makes very little distinction between them because somehow, from the very start, even as a music listener, he was interested in looking at all music as related to all other music.
I had always wanted to be a composer, even from when I was age of four, so that was never a question. But when I was 8 years old, that was about the time when the Stravinsky recording of the Rite of Spring came out. And it was a landmark experience. I can still remember when I had to get up and change the old 12-inch, what was then called long-playing records.
The other piece that really got to Baulkham in those days was the Charles Ives Concord Sonata. They're both loud pieces, but aside from that, what really got him?
Well, I suppose the fearless mixture of dissonance and popular references, and that somehow really resounded to me. I remember going to the record store when you could go in and play them, you know, and try them out, and I said, I've got to have this. And my parents learned somehow to be tolerant. In fact, I kept playing them over and over again, those two pieces.
Stravinsky had used Russian folk tunes in the Rite of Spring. And it wasn't uncommon for Stravinsky to draw on popular melodies.
My old teacher, Darius Milhaud, went to the premiere of Petrushka in 1911, and as they left the hall, he heard all the Russians singing the tunes of Petrushka, but with the words.
And Charles Ives had mixed American folk melodies with his own ironic sound.
There are quotes all over the place, and one of them, of course, is in that wonderful song called Waltz, which is in the late 90s, which quotes Little Annie Rooney, which is a very popular song of its time. There's lots of cases where it was all open to him. He found a way to integrate the music he heard and his very strongly Brahmsian approach toward orchestration and writing music.
And speaking of the famous European classical composers of the last two centuries, they weren't above pulling in pop tunes. It's just that they're not pop tunes anymore, so we don't always recognize them.
I mean, look at the Academic Festival Overture of Brahms, which quotes folk songs and Gaudeamus Musigitur and so on.
To say nothing of Beethoven, Haydn, and Schubert.
Popular tunes and contra dances and all kinds of stuff that were around there. The start of opera was essentially taking two popular effects of the late 16th, early 17th century. And all the dances in Orfeo were the popular dances of the time of Monteverdi. There's never been any problem about that in European culture.
Here in the U.S., the history of popular music and classical music has been a little different.
Ours has always been sort of exclusivist. You know, this is high line music over here, and there's that lousy poppy music over there, which is just, you know, we're supposed to enjoy it. So therefore, if it's enjoyable, maybe it's suspect. That's part of the Puritan tradition. Well, I've always been an enemy of that, and it's been one of the problems I've had as a composer. People would like to picture, they don't know what to do with your complicated side versus your pop side, and realize they're also the same person. That whole wall has been, I think, a great enemy to both our classical, or so to speak, serious or art music tradition on one hand, and I think it has impoverished pop music.
So, as a listener, Baucom plays the field. But if pressed, he will commit.
If you had to ask me what I would not give up, it would be probably the late Beethoven quartets, because that's really the closest to my heart of anything. I think they go directly to a particular deep spiritual discourse that very few pieces in the rest of the canon do.
With these quartets, again, it's the mixed genres that move Baucom.
Look at the Opus 130 quartet. You have the Danza alla Tedesca, which is a popular German dance. Two movements later, you have the Große Fuge. Which is one of the most seminal pieces.
So any combination of any form with any other is okay with him, as long as it doesn't sound like crossover music.
The idea is to be authentic. The idea is to be real. We get influenced by everything we hear. I need the directness of pop, and I need the abstruseness of something that's much more complex, simply because without that, my language is poorer. I need it all, and I've always felt that we all needed it all.
William Baucom was and is addicted to the composers who mix it up.
And I love that whole idea of this catholicity and openness of approach, which is always used by the greatest. And I said, I want to be in that line. I don't want to be involved. These people are exclusivist.
You could never accuse Baucom of exclusivism in his composing or in the listening he did to music that first impressed him years ago. For WNYC, I'm Sarah Fishko. Thanks for listening to The Fishko Files from WNYC, New York Public Radio. Check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member today at WNYC.org. See you next week for another installment of Fishko Files from WNYC, New York Public Radio.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.